Hey Ben, how's it going?
Oh my god.
So what was the can do you want to talk about it or do you not want to talk about it?
Oh, it's not a big deal. They changed one of the locks on one of our doors here at the theater. And the lock mechanism was the same as the old keys.
Uh-huh.
So nobody would have to change their keys. However, none of the old keys worked.
Ah.
And so, fortunately, I ran into the dude who's like the building manager when I was down testing all the keys. And so he basically had to go to the locksmith and get new keys cut that did work. So I just had to wait for him.
Ah, so everyone is getting new keys?
Everyone, well, see, we all have three keys to this building. There are three different doors that you need to unlock to get into the theater. And so everybody needs to replace one of those three keys.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Okay. Fun stuff.
Well,
how are you doing?
Good. Did they normally need two keys or has it always been three?
It's always been three. But the thing is, the one lock that they replaced is this metal gate outside.
Yes.
The metal gate outside, if you'll recall, is never closed.
Yes.
I mean, it's always open. It's rare when, like, if I come to the theater at like midnight or something, then yeah, the gate's closed. But you know, normally it's always open during business hours.
I seem to remember that. Yes.
Yeah.
So here's something kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Remind me to talk about Christmas gifts.
Christmas
in
gifts.
A little bit.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me write that down.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. Having worked in this office that I work in for a while, I have come up with new hypotheses about the way that human memory works. Because we solve an issue, we are like, oh, this issue needs to be solved, and we talk about it. And then eventually one of us, often it's me, but sometimes it's somebody else, is like, this feels like deja vu, doesn't it? And we realize that it's a problem that we solved like 3 or 4 months ago or a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And that no one, that like there was just one small piece that we had forgotten to do. But then we forgot everything. And I'm thinking, this is my thought, is that human beings actually, our memories aren't just like really bad. They're super duper duper bad. And that language, right?
Yeah.
The written word, all that stuff helps us remember things.
I've always been so envious of people who had good memories. At least I think I felt that way.
Yeah. Yes. I have a pattern of now. See, again, we've talked about this before. I have a disadvantage. Like, I can't. All these assumptions I have about human memory, I can't really guarantee because my memory got jumbled after a car accident I had when I was 16.
Well, I didn't know that.
And so, yeah. I lost a lot of, like, there were some childhood memories that I have that are very vivid.
Yeah.
And that can't, like, you know, my dad, my adopted father, often says, well, you were too young. You couldn't possibly remember that.
Right.
But some of these things that I remember are just me and, like, one other person. So no one could have told me that these things happen, right?
So,
but
like,
in the same way, though,
give me an example of one of these memories from when you were a kid.
Okay, I was in the living room, and my mom, Barbara, who died when I was 3, so this had to be, you know, an early memory, farted, and I was like, "Ooh, what's that smell?" And she looked at me, exasperated, and she said, I passed gas. I remember that distinctly. Like, that is, and no one else could have told me that story.
Yeah.
I just remember it. And so, so I can't say that my memory was wiped out because I remember these things, but a lot of stuff, I just, blank spaces. I remember them because people told me stories. So it's like, the way I always describe it is, it's like how I might remember a TV show. And I can remember what happened in that TV show's episode for a really, really long time. But it didn't happen to me. You know, it's just stuff that I remember because other people told me about it.
Right.
Much like what my dad says happened with my childhood memories. But the thing is, nobody told me this story about my mom farting, for example.
Doesn't sound like a story your dad would tell you.
Yeah, exactly. But it was very memorable. Because I felt bad afterwards that she, you know, was that exasperated with me. Because I think I was, I want to say I was probably a little jerk. Like not, haha, what was that? It was, but like, I was like, ooh, what, you know, like, yeah. I didn't know that it was her necessarily, but right. I wasn't kind about it.
Or like what happened?
Yeah. I was honestly, you know, I was being honest, which wasn't that appealing, probably. Right. All right, speaking about Christmas gifts. All right, here we go.
I can remove my note.
I asked my parents. They were like, well, what do you want? And I was like, you know what? You know, I'd like a keyboard. Just a, you know, a keyboard that you play, you know, like a piano, like maybe full-size keys and all that. And I didn't really think anything of it. But I had to call them back afterwards. I was like, never mind. Because those things are expensive. It was very much like, how much could a keyboard be? What, $80? Yeah. You know, or whatever. But no. Back in the 80s or 90s, when I was pricing them, they were probably that much. But
well, when I bought my keyboard years ago, I bought an old crappy used one. And it was, yeah. I think I bought the cheapest one that this used instrument store had, and it was like $100.
Yeah, so there's that. A little bit too expensive. But that was a, and I felt bad. I was like, I was thinking of something that I wouldn't buy myself, and it wasn't that I wouldn't buy myself buy it because it's too expensive. It's just that it's something that I was like, oh, I might like one of those, but I'd always buy something else first.
Well, you know, when you get the keyboard, then you got to buy a keyboard stand, and then you got to get, yes. You know, bought it by Sheet Music so you can play, and then you got to get a nice speaker system because the speakers that are inside the keyboard or an amplifier, and
exactly.
It's just a means to very expensive.
And don't you really expensive, want expensive a guitar instead? Like, isn't that really what? So there's that. That's number one. But number two, this is the other, these are just, you know, it's a placeholder in my brain. There's something that you, Ben Lawrence, can get me for Christmas.
Oh, gosh, what is it?
And here it is. I'm going to lay it on you. Are you familiar with the Walk of Life project?
I am not.
Okay. Look that up first.
I'm not allowed to.
Oh, yeah. No, after this podcast.
Okay.
Look it up and see it. And what it is it's somebody has postulated that the song Walk of Life
by the Dire Straits.
By the Dire Straits is the perfect song to go over the ending of any movie. And they have this project where they play it over the end of the movie, right? Over and over and over again. Of different movies, and it always works. It's crazy. Right?
Yeah.
It adds something to the end of that movie.
Any movie.
In the same way, yeah, that's the concept. In the same way, people have said that the final episode of Twin Peaks, the end of it is incomprehensible or maddening or annoying or, you know, whatever you want to say. I want to see, and no one has done it yet, Walk of Life over the end of Twin Peaks. And I was like, I can't do it because I don't have any video editing stuff.
This is
but
the,
I know someone who does.
This is the end of the movie?
Did I say Firewalk with Me?
No,
oh my
I
gosh.
Was...
Sorry, everyone. I might have said it.
I assumed you said Firewalk with Me, but you're talking about the end
of... Twin Peaks The Return. The finale, episode 18.
Okay.
The very last part of it. So that is, and it doesn't have to happen now. It's just something that I want you to think about.
Okay.
Because I want this thing to exist. And I don't know how you feel about like copyright, all that kind of stuff. You could anonymously leak it onto the internet somehow.
Well, I think fair use says that if you are showing a clip from a TV show as a form of critique,
yes,
then it falls under fair use.
So all I'm saying is I would like you to do it. I would like you to put it on the YouTube channel. And I really think that people will love it.
I'm having some issue drinking my coffee.
Oh my gosh.
So you want to put maybe I'll put it on a secret YouTube channel that I started about 7 years ago to do something else that I didn't think was quite legal. So I'll put it on that channel. There's only one other video on that channel.
That sounds great.
And yeah.
Have I seen that video?
You may have. When I send you the link, you'll see the other video on this channel.
Okay, great. Sounds good. So I think, but the other thing is, Ben, I think it has potential to be the most popular video you've ever created.
I don't know, man. I got a video of two lesbian nuns making out on my YouTube channel, and it has the most hits of anything I've ever done artistically.
Wait, when did that happen?
It was for Penguins. It was a video bit that we actually showed during the show, during the play. And I'm like, well, this is funny. Let's just put it on YouTube. And right now, like, there's two different versions of it because they had two different actors play the same role. So we had to film it twice.
Yes.
And so both versions are up. But one of them has, like, over 300,000 hits right now.
Wow.
And the other one is only into the tens of thousands. But I am no longer allowed to monetize it. I did monetize these. But I'm no longer allowed. Of course I'm going to monetize it. You know, I could use the extra 50
crazy.
Cents. But YouTube took that away from me because somebody flagged it as like inappropriate or something, or R-rated.
Oh,
because it's two lesbians. But there's no nudity or anything like that. But
that's too bad.
I don't really care. You know, I didn't fight for it, but
man, Ben, this whole net neutrality thing, it's crazy.
Oh, so you do know about that. That's fresh news today.
People at work were talking about it. I'm kidding. I don't know anything about it. What was that, Betty? Oh, Betty said time for her to do her homework. Net neutrality, time to do homework. No. But
that's a lot of people are freaking out, as well they should.
Yep, that's right. Wait, say again, Ben, I'm sorry.
A lot of people are freaking out about the FCC's vote to repeal net neutrality. As well they should, you know. Like you win some, you lose some, like
No, Betty.
Progressives had a big victory with Doug Jones's Senate win in Alabama, and then 2 days later, net neutrality gets taken away from us.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you think about it, I don't know. Paying for the internet is already happening. Now it's just we're paying more for it, that kind of thing, and... And here's the thing. Stuff is bad. that's all I got.
Full stop.
Best part of the podcast, I think, so far. That was.
Yeah. So, there's still a chance for it not to go through. Congress still has the power to stop. the
FCC's
ruling. Oh,
and Doug Jones is now in Congress, right?
What's that?
Doug Jones is now in Congress. Is that right?
He's in the Senate.
Darn it.
Well, I mean,
wait a second. Hold on. Congress is made up of the House.
Congress
and the Senate,
is the House and the Senate, but I don't know.
Hey, all right.
I don't know if all I've heard is Congress can stop it, but I don't know which branch.
Well, maybe both. Maybe it has to go to the House of Representatives. I seem to remember something about that. A bill becomes a law, like it goes to one of the places. I think it was the House first, and then it goes to the Senate, and then it goes back to the House.
And then it goes to committee, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so I don't know.
Oh my gosh, Buffalo Bill talking about how a bill becomes a law. First it goes to the House, then it goes to the Senate. Then it puts, you know, the lotion on the skin guy.
Right.
But he's describing to the
it
bill.
It puts the
from,
amendment
from
in the school. Bill.
Right. He's talking to the bill from Schoolhouse Rock
right.
about
yeah, yeah, yeah.
how the bill from Schoolhouse
and
Rock.
The and bill now, is in the bottom of a well.
And the bill has become like this weird 3D cartoon that doesn't quite work. That's something that I really... Okay, Ben, I'm going to get a little weird here for a second.
A little?
But, again, one of these things that I remember very distinctly as a kid, Batmite. Are you familiar with Batmite?
Batmite. Yes, that
Batmite
was...
Batmite is like Mr. Mixelplick, or however you pronounce it, because it changes how they pronounce his name. But the Superman, the sort of elf alien guy that tormented Superman, he was that.
Yeah.
But for Batman.
But yeah, I remember Batmite. It was part of like the old Batman cartoon.
And so I was trying to think about what Batmite would look like in the real world, and trying to take a two-dimensional image on a TV screen and expand it to three dimensions was really difficult for my little brain at the time. And it made me kind of insane as a child.
And it lasted all these many years.
But my dad was like, what's wrong? I was just like, argh. He's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I can't think about what Batmite would look like in the real world.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wanted me to, like, run and lift weights and stuff, and so this wasn't really part of the agenda. However, he was also a Lutheran minister, so very, right. you know, cerebral in many ways. But I don't think he was down for discussing it.
But your dad...
He was just... Yeah, go ahead.
Ultimately, your dad wanted you to be an athlete?
No, well, sort of. Not really an athlete. He just wanted me to be stronger than I was.
Okay.
He wanted me to be stronger. He wanted me to be good at, like, fixing things.
I don't want no weak little boy for a son.
No, he wasn't like that. He was like, hey, why don't you, come on, just run, you know, let's
go outside
I expect
and
you
get
to
some
do this.
Fresh air. Stop reading them books.
Yeah, exactly. Although he did not talk. With the voice that you've given him. He was very metered and very matter-of-fact and very...
I'm being unfair, and I'm calling him anti-intellectual. And, of course, I give any anti-intellectual characterization a Southern drawl.
Exactly, yeah. And he did have tons and tons of schooling.
Yeah.
Could read Latin, Greek, French, and German, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know.
Yeah.
I think I told you the story also. When we, in 2014, we were staying at their house when we moved back for a little
right.
bit.
Yeah.
And he sat down at the piano and just started playing it. And I'm like, you can't. How? When did this happen?
Did you not know your dad could play piano?
He's like, I've always been able to play piano. I'm like, when? Since... You know, it's that it's the whole Berenstain Bears thing, Ben. the Mandela effect. So,
yeah.
Oh, speaking about which, Jennifer said something, and I forget what it was that she wanted to tell us. It was something that I did wrong. I don't remember what it was.
Was she upset that you were eating during the last show?
I don't know. She didn't talk to me about it, but probably. I think she was upset at me on the day. Like, because she was there watching me eating while I was talking to you. So
all right.
That was a problem. But here's a question. Did she turn in any corrections?
Oh, yeah. Hang on. While I pull that up, why don't you tell the people, because it's been a couple of weeks since we've had corrections. Why don't you tell them what
That's
corrections
right.
are?
Of course. So Ben and I, a while back, we've been doing this podcast for about a year, would you say, Ben?
Is episode 96.
96. And
so
it's
for 96
once a
weeks.
Week?
So more Whoa. Than a year.
More than a year. Almost 2 years.
Yeah.
In fact. So Ben and I have been doing this podcast a while back. I forget exactly when. We had a discussion about how people think they're smarter than they actually are because they have access to Google. And they look up stuff on Google all the time. And it's too bad. And that people should try to think about things and discuss things without using Google to see how not smart they actually are. And we decided to do it on the podcast. And for a while, as proof of concept, we would look up questions on like the internet and write them down and then try to answer them without looking up the answers on the internet, that kind of thing. But we soon quickly learned that we get things wrong even without trying. We can just be incorrect at something. So that's when we started this thing called corrections. And what corrections is listeners, just like you, dear listener, can write to us and tell us about things that we got wrong. And it's been, I think, three people have given us corrections. Stephen McCandless, Jose Amador, and my wife, Jennifer Pratt, who is so far in the lead with doing most of the corrections. But you are free to also submit your corrections. Dear listener, write to Ben's email address at yahoo.com@gmail.com.
It's just Ben's email at yahoo.com@gmail.com.
Oh, Ben's email. Sorry. Yeah. Ben's email at yahoo.com@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And maybe your corrections will be read on the podcast.
Yeah, if we get something wrong, let us know and we'll correct them. So speaking of corrections, Jennifer did send corrections. She sent quite a bit. So
Yeah, because we haven't had corrections for a while. So this is going to span a couple of episodes, maybe. So strap in.
It might also,
ladies and gentlemen,
it might also have something to do with I screwed up and I forgot to post one of the episodes, which I mentioned last week.
Yeah.
But anyway, so episode 92.
Okay.
Number one, Ben, I have and continue to endorse your conjugate forms of snow as snoo and has snown. Keep up the fight. This is actually, we were probably talking about snow, but this comes from, it must have been my bio in the show Jennifer and I did years and years and years and years and years ago called The Ebenezer Cycle, where I didn't write a bio. I just said that I want us to change the way we conjugate the verb to snow. Because if it after it has snowed, that's what we say. It has snowed. It must have snowed last night. But I think we should conjugate it like the way we conjugate the verb to know. It snew last night. It has snown. It has never snown like this before.
I agree with those.
I like it better than snowed. Snowed sounds like you have a cold, which I guess is appropriate.
And snowed in, too. Now you think, oh, we're snowed in. Oh, really? Let me rush off to the Russian embassy. Wait, is he out now? I forget.
Snowden?
No, I don't think he...
He's holed up in Russia, isn't he?
I think I'm getting him and Chelsea Manning confused.
Number two.
Because somebody got out. I think it was her.
Okay. Number two.
Hey, really quick, Ben.
Yeah.
Betty is standing here mouthing, I have a question to me over and over and over again.
I was, but I'm not now.
What is your question, Betty?
Where is the computer paper?
Okay, Ben. I'm going to look for computer paper while you read the next correction.
Number two, the gray or gray ones shared one eye and one tooth. They are similar to the Morai, the Fates. They are sisters of the Gorgons, and Perseus stole the eye to force them to tell him how to kill Medusa. What were we talking about? That doesn't ring a bell at all.
Oh, yeah. Sharing an eye. People sharing an eye.
Right. Yeah. This has been so long. So, we're on episode 96, and these are corrections from 92, so it's been a couple weeks.
The problem that Betty is having is she doesn't know where the computer paper is, and the reason she doesn't know is I don't think there is any. Betty, is this for school?
Yeah, I need to put my work on the map.
Oh, here. Well, use this paper then. I'm giving Betty a piece of Bristol paper. Archive quality drawing paper.
There you go.
For your maths.
Bye-bye.
Okay, shut the door also, please, when you leave. Oh, no, don't. The cat's in here. All right, fine. Okay, Ben, what's next?
We were talking about spelling, and I asked if they still taught spelling in school, what with all the autocorrect available at every turn. And she says, yes, they teach spelling in elementary school and vocabulary in middle school in Edwardsville. They also even teach cursive. Now, that surprised me. Cursive? Who writes cursive?
Yeah, it's true.
Wow. Yeah. And finally,
you never know when you might have to. Okay, Betty, now shut the door, please.
You never know when you might have to make something really, really hard to read.
Exactly.
That's when cursive comes in handy. And
all
finally,
the way, please. Thank you.
Finally, sorry. For episode number 92. The Schoolyard Bullies. She says, I was there for a rehearsal. I loved it. And then she quotes the song, give me your lunch or I'll punch you in your stupid face.
Oh, yeah. I think it was, give me your lunch or I'll punch you in your stupid face. Give me like that. Yeah.
You suck, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck.
Yeah, that's right. It was great. It was great. It was very cathartic also. Because I think none of us were bullies when we were actually in high school or grade school. High school bullies existed, but they were a little bit like, dude, you're kind of, this is going to last forever, sort of.
There are no corrections for episode 93. I had to go back and look and see if 93 was posted, and it was, so we're good there. But episode 94. We were talking about Hervé Villechaize.
You know, the one thing is that she did lose some notes.
Ah.
When the windstorm came and took this is a true thing. She sits out on the front porch and wind will come by and like get rid of not just her notes, but her crossword puzzle. So the wind takes away, Ben.
and it never gives back.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So we were talking about Hervé Villechaize from.
Oh right, this is the one. This is the one that you told me about.
Yeah, from Tattoo from Fantasy Island, and we were wondering if he was actually. I called him Latino, and then we thought maybe he might have been Portuguese.
No. You thought that he was. You said Hispanic at the time.
Yeah.
And I said...
And I immediately...
No, I think he's Belgian.
Yeah, I immediately knew that I was wrong.
I said that he was Belgian or maybe he's from Morocco is what I said.
All right, so she says... I heard a scream wrenched out from the soul of a French actor. Belgique, mais non. He's not just French. He's born in Paris French.
Yes. Belgique, mais non. That was her, like, she actually did a little impression. It was very cute.
All right, so
a little impression. I'm sorry to Hervé Villechaize, to his estate, and to Chris Tallman, who does a Hervé Villechaize impression that is magnifique.
Yeah.
You can hear it on the Super Ego podcast.
All right. So we were also talking about you being in France. She says, Paul,
yes.
I believe you were in France in the summer of 2003. Italy had a massive heat wave that year that killed over 20,000 people. Good Lord. You were cautioned against going to Italy, not because of being all American, but rather that Italy was in a state of emergency.
I don't know.
Do you want to issue a correction to a correction?
Well, no, here's the thing. You can find out, Ben, or I could find out, I guess, if we know when France's election was. This is why I don't think so, because I think it was in 2002, because France's election was happening. Like, it was the election, or it's whenever Chirac was elected.
So
the campaigns were happening while I was there.
Okay, so it was
between Le Pen and Chirac.
Le Pen? Seriously? She's been around that long?
Her dad.
Oh, her dad. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been around that long.
Yeah. They're like the Bushes of France.
The Bushes of France is a good name for a band. But a horrible concept.
We were talking about the movie Alien, I guess, and she says Alien was directed by Ridley Scott, not Kubrick. Did I mention Kubrick directed Alien? Did you? I totally.
It could have been me, but I don't think so. I know the difference between the two.
I know. Yeah, I know that Ridley Scott directed Alien. If I said Kubrick, it was just me not thinking while I was talking.
Thinking of 2001, maybe.
Yeah.
Space, you know,
or The Shining. Number four, we've talked about pet insurance for Abby. Number four, we never had pet insurance. We had a discount program called Pet Assure. It would get us 10% off meds and stuff, so it wasn't really worth it for either of us or the vet's office.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, so 10%. There you go. And five, finally, we were talking about going to see plays and what happens when there's a prop malfunction.
Yes.
I think I had mentioned that I had seen a play and something had rolled off the desk, like a piece of paper or a pencil or something, and that was all I could stare at. And she says, I seriously want to give a masterclass on what to do when things go wrong with props or costumes. It drives me crazy to see an actor simply let a pencil roll along the floor and not pick it up, or stare blankly if something breaks or doesn't work properly. Congrats, kids. This scene is now about the pencil. I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's, like, because we're all in theater and have done theater, if we're more in tune to these kinds of things than your average audience member who has not acted in a play and has not had to deal with prop malfunction. Like, does your average audience member see the pencil on the floor?
You know, that's a really good question. And I mean that sincerely, because here's the thing, right? You know that study where they had the teams, and you were supposed to count the jerseys or count how many times they passed the basketball or whatever.
Right,
and then the gorilla comes out.
Yeah,
it's like one of those things and I know this sounds weird, but maybe the people that are watching the play are just watching people talking and not really noticing.
Yeah,
the set or any of that.
Maybe
that stuff.
It would be an interesting sort of like study to get a bunch of different people who have never seen a play before, people who have seen plays before but don't do theater, and actors and other theater artists to all see the same play. And in this play, your actors specifically mess up with their props, but not in like a big grandiose way, right?
Yeah.
A pencil rolls off the table and falls onto the floor, or a piece of paper like wafts, you know, somewhere, or like a costume piece goes very subtly awry, and to talk to the people afterwards and to see who picks up on it and like how much were they drawn out of that scene because of that thing.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Picture falling off the wall. Would that be enough or too much?
I think a lot of it depends on how much noise it makes. Like, if we're talking about a wood frame falling off the wall and, like, making a loud crashing sound.
Yeah.
That would be disturbing. But, like...
Okay, because here's what I'm thinking, right?
If somebody's
holding... You could do this, Ben. You specifically could do this. Just wait until Annex has a show. Deliberately mess up one of the props.
Sabotage the play.
And do it on a regular night, and then do it on an industry night. And see if there's a difference.
Right. All right. So there we go. That's all for episode 94. Episode 95, uh-huh. Which was last week. Number one.
Yes.
Why is Paul eating again? Just why?
No.
Dear God, no. Paul, just don't. Do you think we can't tell? We can. We can tell. Just don't. End quote.
I will say that it was definitely not a secret. I was apologizing throughout doing it.
All right. We don't have to dwell on that too much, but we were talking about Flavor Flav, and you mentioned Prophets of Rage, and I said that Flava Flav has sued Chuck D because he feels that he's missed out on a lot of Public Enemy residuals and profits, which is probably true.
Yes.
And So she says, Flavor Flav is an incredible musician. He can play piano, drums, bass guitar, all mostly in jazz style. This isn't a correction, just that man deserves serious respect.
Yes.
I had no idea. I actually thought of him as a not talentless but instrumentless artist, right?
Like that what he did was what he would do was what he did,
yeah,
basically.
Like all he did was like he only showed up to the recording studio when after Chuck D had written the songs and just yelled into the microphone when he felt appropriate. I should look
Which
into Flavor Flav more.
Maybe, you know, and just like any great artist, may not want to, you know, hang out with or, you know.
Yeah.
I just have a feeling. I have a feeling, and I'm not positive, but partially because he and Chuck D aren't working together right now, that he may be somewhat difficult to work with.
And I've found that people who are difficult to work with are also people who are difficult to be friends with.
In general, yeah. I would say yes.
So, you know, as the saying goes, never meet your heroes. So,
yes.
I wouldn't say Flavor Flav is a hero.
Let's go ahead and say, who is it that you thought that you would like that you met them and you didn't like? And not famous people, people that are in your daily... No, I'm kidding. But still... And this is generally a thing that sometimes when you're like, oh, this person has this really great persona, and you're like, oh wait, no, nope, this is that person, this is who they are, and on stage it's interesting, and off stage,
I have heard people speak ill of some famous, like, not famous, yeah, I would say famous, famous people, television personalities who are presenters of information geared mainly towards children and teenagers. And, like,
yes.
You want to like this, okay, it's Bill Nye, but you want to like Bill Nye, right? You want him to be a nice person. But I've heard a number of accounts saying that, oh, yeah, I ran into him and he was a total jerk to me. Well...
Oh,
fine. If you like, if you accosted him in the grocery store when he just wanted to buy some broccoli, yeah, he might be a little short with somebody with you.
Oh,
if you don't let him be a private citizen when he wants to be.
This reminds me of a story that I heard, which I think is interesting. Jennifer and I had a little conversation about it yesterday. Okay, have you seen Get Out yet?
I have.
Okay. So the guy who played the gardener.
Do we have Get Out spoilers here?
I wasn't going to spoil it.
Okay.
I was just going to say the guy who played the gardener.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was also in Django Unchained.
Okay.
And he has a story about how he was in Django Unchained, and during like the premiere of it. He was in this movie with Samuel L. Jackson, and he wanted to get a picture with him.
Yeah.
And Samuel L. Jackson really put him through the ringer, like, saying, well, what do you say, please? And then a friend saying, hey, man, you don't have to be like that to this kid. And Samuel Jackson saying, well, they've got to learn, you know, stuff like that. Like, and in the middle of the story, he's like, and all of a sudden it dawned on me, I could be famous. I could be famous as the guy who choked out Samuel L. Jackson at his movie premiere. And I am not this, I've never been that close, but there has been, and I think that we've all run through this idea of how much trouble could I really get into if I,
yeah,
and then blank, right?
Yeah.
And that's actually how this is, you know, people have their shoplifting stories about how they, you know, shoplifted, whatever. When I was a kid, right, the way that I shoplifted was, you know, I missed that time when you did it when you were a little kid because I knew that it was wrong. I knew that stealing was wrong. I knew all that. I think I've mentioned this. I read the Stainless Steel Rat books by Harry Harrison.
Okay.
Which, by the way, if you read them and you're impressionable, you might start stealing stuff. Because he has a really good explanation of why being a thief is actually a victimless crime and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Not true, necessarily. If you've ever had something stolen from you, you know that it's kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But the main thing was, I was in a store, and the person that was serving me was rude, in my opinion. And they left. I wanted to buy something, and they left for a really, really long amount of time. And there was just a little voice in my head that was just like, okay, well, what's the worst that could happen if I just left with this thing? They are pointedly not here. Yeah. I think that so that kind of thing, that little voice that says, what's the worst that can happen? I think that if you go for a long time with nothing bad happening, if with no consequences, you forget that consequences are a thing.
Right.
In a way. And that's the other thing with drugs and alcohol, how they can contribute to problems. I think it gives a little microphone to the what's the worst that can happen voice.
It also...
Oh, this is fine. Everyone's going to think it's funny. Don't worry about it.
Like, it's one of those... It amplifies the... It's not just this is fine, but the consequences won't be that bad. Or there won't be any consequences. Or, to go completely further, I can deal with the consequences.
I can deal with the consequences. And also, of course... Everyone's going to think it's funny.
Yeah.
They're going to love me for this. And that's, I think, hecklers in general have that voice screaming at them. Hey.
Do you think?
Is my shot.
Yeah, people who heckle stand-up comedians in clubs think that the comedian or the club owner is going to be like, hey, you're pretty funny. Why don't you get up on stage and entertain the people? No, you're a famous TV star. Good job.
Yeah. And it really what it is it's like somebody breaks into your office and starts stapling things at random. And you're like, hey, have you ever thought about being a business person?
Right.
It's like so much of being a stand-up comic. And this is, of course, now, Ben, you and I were not stand-up comics, but we were in the amateur entertainment field with comedy and stuff.
Right.
So and we've been actors before and stuff. So much of that thing isn't just, hey, how good are you on stage? But, hey, how much do I want to be around you for 5 hours a night for the next 2 or 3 weeks or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, and this is, I know that we've talked about this before, but this is the idea about Keanu Reeves when people, you know, are unimpressed with his acting ability and stuff like that. That he's a really, really nice guy to have on set. Like, he's kind and friendly and brings, like, food and stuff like that. I don't know.
There's
exactly.
There's actually a viral clip of him just riding the subway and offering his seat to someone. Because, to, like, a lady. I think she was, it wasn't an old person, but I think she was just, you know,
20-30-year-old lady standing up, and he just offered a seat to her.
Well, that was very nice of him. And then there's the other thing of Neil deGrasse Tyson typing on his computer, and somebody took a picture and wrote, this is one of my favorite things. I'm not on Twitter anymore, but this was something somebody had done on Twitter. They took a picture, and get ready, Ben, because I'm about to swear. Took a picture of Neil deGrasse Tyson on his laptop on the subway and wrote, look at this f-ing nerd. And so many people wrote in to correct the guy and go, actually, that's Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah, which
can't
is...
Can't get away with subtle humor on the internet.
Exactly. So... Oh, by the way, I realized, was that it for corrections?
Just one more thing. She lists out the members of Prophets of Rage. Tom,
Yeah. Can we go over it?
Yeah, sure. So we got three members of Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave: Tim Comerford, Tom Morello, and Brad Wilk. Two members of Public Enemy: Chuck Dean, DJ Lord, and one member of Cypress Hill: Be Real. Keep it wrong,
yeah,
guys.
Be Real. That's the guy whose name I couldn't remember.
Yep. I had to look up when we were done recording. I had to look up what the names of the members of Cypress Hill are, because I am 41, almost 42. I thought Cypress Hill was the name of the dude.
Oh no, are you serious?
I am serious. I'll admit to those things. I'll also admit that I was probably in my mid 30s before I realized that Humpty Hump and Shock G were the same person.
Now, Ben, I have to say that you, I think, were the person that told me that Shock G and Hump, I think you told me that. So
did
you learned it.
Did I break it to you, or were you just like, yes, everybody knows that since they were 12?
No. You broke it to me. Wow. You knew more, and I remember this, you knew more about Digital Underground than I did. Because it was you that told me that Tupac Shakur was a member of Digital Underground.
Did I tell you that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, well, that makes sense, because they had an album called Sex Packets, and I bet you that's where he got the name Tupac from, because he needed two of them, because
I don't
so much
know.
Sex.
I don't know.
But I don't know if that was
I don't know if those things
true.
Are connected. I mean, all those facts are right. Tupac was in the band, and they did have an album called Sex Packets. Well, they had a song called Sex Packets. I don't know.
Yeah,
if
but
the
Sex
album
Packets
was
were
that.
A. It was, I believe, it was a science fiction kind of thing.
Yeah, it was.
Where
it
sex
was,
packets were a thing.
They were pills, and they made you basically dream about wild sex.
Yeah, and so that's why, like I said, that's why he's Tupac, because he takes two. I think we had this exact conversation like 20 years ago or something like that.
Probably. Oh, good Lord. It's almost been 20 years. My goodness.
Yeah. Wait a second.
99 is when I met
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it will be 20 years in a year.
A little over a year
and
from
a
now.
Half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, Ben. Wow.
God.
That's crazy. So thank you for the corrections, Jennifer. And sorry, notice no eating today. I have not been eating during the podcast today at all. I'm Goot. Trying my best.
All right. I, however, am going to try to not choke on my coffee anymore. Well, I've had all of it, so.
Yeah. Oh, hey, speaking about with, this doesn't have anything to do with the, with coffee, but. I have had a problem for the past 20 years at least, where sometimes when I swallow, it's not choking, but sometimes when I swallow, I actually can't breathe. Like when I'm eating something.
You're going to have to be more specific. Is it good? Does it go
it
down
feels
the wrong
like, okay,
pipe or?
Here's the best way I can describe it. It's like I'm choking, but I'm choking on it in my chest. Like it's gone down far enough. Sort of like the wrong pipe, but it's different.
Does it get...
It's really, really weird. And when I met my biological family, my uncle. I think it's my uncle. It could be my cousin. I don't remember exactly the relationship. David said, "Have you been scoped? You should get scoped for sure, because that's a family issue."
Right. I think you mentioned that.
And now, and here's the thing: I didn't ask at the time.
The phrase "getting scoped" is just a terrible, terrible phrase.
Is it something that they do to your throat, or was he talking about a colonoscopy? Because if he was, what does that have to do with my throat?
He's just looking after your general health and well-being.
Yeah. But still, all I said was no, because if I had been scoped, I would have remembered it probably.
Unless the aliens did it.
Exactly. Oh man, that was another thing that Jennifer and I were talking about. She was like, you know, what if alien abductions are like when you mess with cats and you put tape on their paws? And then she was like, stick this in their butt, it makes them crazy. And that's all it is. And I am doing you a disservice because it's much funnier when Jennifer does it.
Why would you put tape on a cat's paws?
People put tape on a cat's paws because the cat tries to get it off, and it's really funny to watch.
I grew up with cats. I never once put tape on a cat's paws, although I did put Christmas bows on its head, which it didn't like that.
Yeah. And I really do think that much alien phenomenon is that. It's just higher beings with a sense of humor going, okay, watch this. They're gonna read the word pigeon, then they're gonna see a pigeon, and then they're gonna hear Bert singing "Doing a Pigeon," or "Doing the Pigeon," in this car that passes off. Hey, get this! I'm gonna go back in time and alter the way Berenstain is spelled, and they're gonna go crazy. Watch them! Oh my gosh, Ben, we figured out the Mandela effect. That's exactly what it is. Oh, check this out.
Aliens having a good time.
Yeah. Check this out. It's going to be called Krispy Kreme, spelled with K's. Now we're going to change it to C's. Now let's change it back to K's. Look at them. Look how crazy it's making them. It's awesome. Yep. There we go. Problem solved.
All right. Prankster aliens could be, you know, the solution to a lot of the problems these days.
Exactly.
Or like not a solution, but an explanation.
There's a new hypothesis that I heard today that I love.
What is that?
I'm going to break it down just generally. Time and space, right?
Yeah.
Don't exist. They're hallucinations of us that we've made to make sense of whatever the actual reality underlying our experiences.
So far I'm seeing the Matrix. I mean, how is this?
But imagine this. Imagine it's the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
But instead of it being, you know, an alternate dimension where there are these robots and, you know, you're in tanks or whatever and all that.
Right.
The real world is like two dimensional and we're all just a bunch of dots or information or whatever. And this two dimensional space that this three dimensional space that we exist in. Keeps us from it makes it more interesting for us to do our computational existence. Basically.
We are all but an inkjet dot on a paper universe.
Hey, speaking about which, Inkblot. Do you remember Inkblot?
Inkblot.
He is a guy, he won some kind of contest at Annex and got to be
A sidekick on Spin the Bottle? Yeah, I remember that guy. He won a Spin the Bottle performance, like at an auction.
Yeah, and he was a comedian of some kind.
Like a performance artist. Although that sounds insulting to other performance artists.
I accept your apology. But no, he was a interesting guy. And I wonder, is he still around? Ben,
if he's still in Seattle, he does not go by Inkblot anymore. But I gotta tell you, I would not recognize him if I saw him today.
That was the other thing I was thinking about. I want to say he has sort of dark hair. And that's about it.
Short Inkblot. The only thing I remember him doing at Spin the Bottle was like he bending over and showing the odd audience his rear end for some reason.
Okay, I wanted to say that I remembered something was butt related. And the term ink blot plus the butt, putting those two things together, just it wasn't a good
not a mental, good visual. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So anyhow, that happened. Hey, I got news.
What's your
about
news?
Betty.
What's that?
Betty auditioned for her school play.
No kidding. What's the school play? Is it another weird Susian adaptation of a Shakespeare?
The musical?
Susical
the musical? The musical. Yeah.
Really?
So it's a Dr. Seuss theme.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, Ben, why speculate when we can find out right now? Hey, buddy!
Oh, God.
We're waiting. Waiting. Here she comes. Okay, here she is. Hey, Betty, how's it going? Let it be known that Betty has fallen face forward onto the bed, and she's now picked up a panda pillow and is hugging it. How's it going, Betty?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Betty, can you confirm, is the thing you auditioned for Seussical the Musical?
Yes.
Did you audition for a specific part?
No.
Just a general audition?
Yes.
When do you find out the results?
Next week.
And did you have to sing?
Yes.
What did you sing?
A song.
What was the song?
Oh, the things you can think.
Oh, okay. So it was a song from the musical?
Yes.
Was there a accompanist, like, on a piano?
Yes.
Were you singing by yourself, or were there other people there?
There was, like, one other person there that was the pianist, who was the person actually running the whole thing.
Was the pianist singing along with you, or were you the only one singing?
I was the only one singing.
Did you have fun singing?
The band director, the act one director, is actually the choir person also.
Yes.
Mr. O'Malley.
Mr. O'Malley is, now, Ben, I want you to think about this.
Okay.
Mr. O'Malley is the choir person and also the director of the musical.
Right.
Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that seems like a conflict of interest.
Oh, because he's only going to cast his choir kids?
Hey, I'm not saying, I'm just saying. We'll see how it goes. I am very interested to see how it works out. Let it be known that Betty is now throwing the panda pillow up in the air and clapping before she catches it. She is down to two claps.
That's some fast hand-eye coordination there.
Yes, fast hand-eye coordination indeed. And, you know, I think this is a nice little, you know, home situation that we've got going on here. It's a very nice little...
Indeed.
I have rediscovered Sergeant Frog.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. Betty has rediscovered Sergeant Frog.
I don't even know what that is.
The best anime of this millennium.
Sergeant Frog is
of this millennium.
The best anime of this millennium, according to Betty. It's about a frog alien who is trying to take over the world.
And also gathering other frog aliens, and they help take over the world too.
Yeah.
But they're really bad at it, and literally almost nobody cares about taking over for the world.
Yeah, they're big slackers, basically. They aren't taking over the world.
Sounds like my kind of people.
But other than that, they're all just big.
Yeah. You know, Ben, I think you might actually find it funny. I find it funny. It's pretty good. All right,
Sergeant Frog, I'll look it up.
Sergeant Frog.
There's a couple of actual people there.
Oh, there are some.
But they already know about all the frogs, but yeah. They're okay with it.
Spoilers for episode one of Sergeant Frog. So the mom of the house where the frog... So the frog has embedded himself in this family. And the mom of the house says that he deserves a room of his own. So she gives him this underground bunker that's underneath the house because it's haunted by a ghost.
Okay.
And he uses...
really pretty.
Yeah, she's really a pretty ghost. And she uses the power of this sphere. He uses the power of this sphere to remake it into a swinging bachelor pad. That's the kind of stuff we're dealing with.
Alrighty.
Here. That's...
And sounds exciting. Let me tell you, one of the members of the platoon thing named Tamama is the cutest thing in the world.
Yeah, Tamama is the cutest thing in the world. And one last thing I'm going to leave you with, Ben.
Yeah.
There is a thing called Gudetama.
Gudetama? Yeah.
Do you know about it?
I do not.
It is a Sanrio character. I think it's Sanrio. Hello Kitty.
Okay.
It's an egg. It's a tiny egg guy. But it is Gude.
Are you going to sue for royalties?
No, because I don't have anything to do with Tama.
Okay.
But still, you should check it out. It's pretty cute. It's a cute little egg guy.
All right, I'll check it out.
And... that's all we have for right now. Betty,
also,
yeah. Betty has a little bit more.
If you're listening to this and you have YouTube, go watch all of Sergeant Frog right now. Just drop whatever you're doing, go on YouTube, look up Sergeant Frog, and watch the whole thing.
There you go. Endorsement of Sergeant Frog by Betty.
Straight from the mouths of Betty.
How about you, Ben? Yes, indeed. From the mouths of Betty's. Anything for you, Ben? Anything else?
Nope. Just do me a solid, Paul, and keep it wrong.
Hey, Ben, keep it wrong. Hey, and we're gonna talk before the holiday, right?
Yeah. We still have one more week before Christmas.
Okay. Yay! And happy Hanukkah to people.
Yeah,
that's a thing.
And all the things.
Yes.
And also happy Kwanzaa.
Yeah, that's later. But yes, that okay. Also. All right. Keep it wrong, Ben.
All right. Keep it wrong. I'll talk to you later.